listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 149 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris Robley, and new to the roundtable is Dimitri Vitsa from Rock, Paper, Scissors Publicity. How you doing, Dimitri? And Chris?
Great.
Chris?
Hey.
Did we lose you?
No, when you asked Dimitri how he was doing first, I was trying to be polite.
And, he said great, so I moved on to you.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even hear it. There must have been some sort of digital mute.
Let me try that again. Great.
The if you don't have the headphones on, you don't hear anything.
No, I'm good too. Today marks the halfway point in my Pledge Music campaign. And also the first day that I'm getting allergies.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Dimitri, I'm trying to remember what episode of the podcast you were on. It wasn't that long ago. You are a publicist and all around nice guy. And we thought, hey, you know, the round table is a little bit more fun when there's multiple voices. So
someone to pick on.
Someone to pick on. Yes, that's right. So welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, so Chris is deep in the throes of a Pledge Music campaign, so he's feeling it.
It's like, well, there's two things. It's a lot of work. I knew it would be. And then I'm just not really, this is terrible to say, I'm not finding enough time to do the thing that I know is most effective, which is to write my Facebook friends individually. Like, I think I've got about 11 or 1,200 friends, and I have probably written to about 300 of them, and it's by far the most effective thing I'm doing. And I just, every night rolls around, like after work, I get my daughter in bed, and I'm like, I'm exhausted. I don't want to go on Facebook. And so, yeah, don't do what I'm doing, I guess.
By going to bed and blowing it off?
Yeah. It's just like, it's great that I found something that's work. You know, I'm 75% of the way there towards my goal. So,
and you got a long ways to go, so you're fine. You can take a night off.
Yeah, well, I've been taking like 4 nights off now and watching too much TV. But
so you'll make it. You'll make it. But
crowdfunding woes.
It's going well. So that's interesting. That emailing, we for our pledge campaign, we emailed a lot of fans directly. And just hitting up your friends on Facebook is working. That's good to know.
Yeah.
So, how about you, Dimitri? What's been going on with you besides, working on our new conference?
Well, that's been a lot of my focus lately. We're helping CD Baby with the organization of the first ever CD Baby DIY Musician Conference in Chicago, October 23rd through 25th. So that's been exciting and fun. You know, a lot of logistics there, but also some good conceptual stuff and just thinking about what's really going to, make a great impact in terms of artists' careers when they show up to this first shindig up there in several months, but not too far off.
So, yeah, we're super excited about this. All three of us will be there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we'll all be there so you can meet us in person. And so,
in fact, we even know that I'm probably going to be doing a session on the art of the pitch there.
That's right. You are going to be doing a session. And Chris,
I get bumped out by something more important.
Yeah. And Chris and I are most likely doing a session together. And I believe I told you, Chris, that we're doing that. But
yeah, and isn't it related to the podcast?
We were going to do something relating to an album release, everything you need to do like leading up to the release of your album. We haven't come up with a fancy title for it yet. But so the DIY Musician Conference this October 23rd through 25th in Chicago. It's only $49, and because we wanted to keep it cheap, so there's no excuse not to come.
Until we raise the rates.
That's true. In August 1st, the price is going up. So get in now. We actually do also have limited tickets since it's our first year. We didn't rent out, Madison Square Garden for this thing. So we do have limited space. So if you're wanting to go. We know you're going to get your money's worth, and we want to see you there and meet you. So the web address is DIYMusicianCon.com, and I will put a link on the show notes of the podcast and have all the information for you. So we hope to see you there. And yeah, so that's that. We've got a good show today. We've got some news, and then we're going to discuss how to craft your story when you're building an artist's story, when you're trying to engage fans, putting together a story that makes people want to find out more about you as an artist. We'll be discussing that later in the podcast. But first, let's get to some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
So here are some of the headlines that happened recently that we thought you should know about. The public launch of YouTube's subscription streaming service MusicKey has been delayed until mid-September. YouTube broke the news in an email to its beta testers, which informed them that their closed trial period was being extended until September 15th. That suggests YouTube either still has more aspects of MusicKey to test or even new ones it's yet to introduce. The message to beta users said, "As one of an exclusive group of MusicKey beta users, your feedback has helped make it better each day. And to thank you, we've got good news. Your free trial is being extended." MusicKey is expected to offer both free and paid tiers, with paying subscribers getting ad-free songs and music videos. At a recent Spotify event in New York City, the streaming service announced a wide range of new features that will include in the app. The new Spotify learns from what you're doing and where you're going during the day and offers more relevant suggestions. In a timeline view, you'll get suggestions of podcasts, individual songs, playlists, and videos that change throughout the day. It also works to understand how people listen to music when running and now automatically analyzes your running pace using the iPhone's accelerometer to find the perfect playlist. As your pace changes between tracks, Spotify will adjust in real time and play you an appropriate track. Spotify also announced that it's adding original video to its service so that you can watch content from creators like Vice, Comedy Central, Twit.tv, and more from right inside the app. For now, the new updates are only available in the iOS version of the app. So just how much time are your fans spending on their phone during a show? Ticketfly recently commissioned Harris Poll to field a survey online among U.S. adults who have a smartphone and attend live events to determine how and how much they are using their phones during live events and shed some light on what they will be doing in the future. Here are a few key data points I felt relevant for our podcast. 31% of 18 to 34-year-olds are using their phones during half of an event or longer. Females in the 18 to 34 range are more likely than their male counterparts to share their experiences via social media apps during the event, 35% versus 22% respectively. And here's one for you, Chris. In the Northeast, 5% of respondents reported that they are on their mobile device the entire time they are at the live event. So there's a
few. we're really leading the way towards just total, I don't know, anarchy.
So yeah, there's some interesting. I'll put a link to that survey. There's a whole bunch more data they had. A lot of it was relating to how people want to buy things at shows and stuff like that with their mobile device. But those were the key points having to do with paying attention to the show and what people are doing with their mobile phones. But I couldn't believe that. 31% said they're using their phones for during half or more of an event. That's a lot.
It's outrageous. Like, oh my, what are they doing?
I don't know. Texting their friends, trying to get them to be jealous for the show they're at.
They should just stay home and watch it on Meerkat.
That's true.
Well, I do think a lot of people go to concerts as part of their identity, as part of like staking who am I, and so if they can share it via their phone, they're probably, it's bragging, basically it's bragging rights in
real time. But does it take you 50% of the concert to share it? Like, just take an Instagram photo, post it, maybe take a little video, post it, and be done.
Hey, if you're putting in hashtags, it takes a while for each post.
That's true.
And then you got to tag everybody in it. It's a long process. That could at least
that, that I I think I read the same news story, and it goes on to propose a lot of ways in which musicians should be able to monetize the phone use during concerts.
Yeah, it does talk about that.
I thought they did a pretty interesting job of brainstorming all the possibilities of people upgrading to VIP experiences or selling merch from there, giving special, like, as the concert's ending, do a 20% discount via phone apps and things so that people are so jazzed, they might say, oh, let's get out of here before the line starts or whatever. And instead, they're like, oh, wait, I should buy this. I'm not going to be able to get it at the store, so let me get it now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, the people, the definite takeaway is that at concerts, people are definitely tied to their phones. It's just so funny to me. I've been following some feed of U2 on Instagram, and they just started their tour. And it was just funny to me back in the day of where they used to say no videos or cameras allowed in the concert, and have people at the door trying to enforce it because cameras were big and bulky. But now I'm kind of getting irritated with how many videos they share. I mean, they're constantly...
Now you can see Edge falling off the stage from like 3,000 different angles.
Yes, exactly. It's just funny how things have changed. But
a few weeks ago, I think it was when I was actually in Oregon last, maybe a month ago, Nico Case had played a show in Portland, and didn't she end the show early because people were on their phones, or maybe they were trying to tape her?
Yeah, well, she had this strict rule that no one, under any circumstance, could use a phone, and someone pulled out a phone to take a picture, and she freaked out and left the stage.
Yeah, and then in the same week, I read something about Katy Perry, how she, like, goes out into her audience and tries to get fans to all, like, you know, take selfies with her. And so it was sort of the two extremes of that one issue.
One artist is doing better than the other, I would assume. Not that Nico Case is doing poorly, but it's one of those things. As an artist, I think trying to stop the phenomena that is happening in our culture is probably not a winning scenario, especially for the independent artist. You don't want to give your fans a reason to not like you and yell at them and make them out to be the enemy while you're trying to play for them. So,
yeah, you got to hire other people to do that.
That's right. That's right.
But I mean, you know, at our Rock, Paper, Scissors showcase at South by Southwest, I did stop a guy who had one of those selfie sticks. He was using it to shoot as if he was like a professional cameraman right in front of the stage with this huge stick with his phone on the end of it. And I was just like, who are you? What are you doing here? And it actually did work out that the performer's manager was right there. And I asked her, who is this guy? Is he with you? And she said, no. And I said, should I stop him? She said, well, I wouldn't want to say that. And I got from that she really did want him to stop, but she didn't want to be the one. So I told him to stop, and he looked at her, and she played dumb, and it was perfect.
Well, see, that was different. You were doing that person a favor, and like, look, everyone in this room is looking at you going, what's your problem?
Exactly.
And it's not about this show. If you're walking down the street with a selfie stick...
Right.
Which I have seen. I was in Hollywood recently. There was someone walking with a selfie stick in one hand while they were filming themselves in the other hand. It was obnoxious.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, the other thing quickly about YouTube, I'm starting to wonder if Music Key is ever going to launch, because we're going on, if it's pushed back to till September, we're now moving on into 2 years from when the rumors were flying that they were going to launch.
They're carrying on a long, proud Google tradition of leaving things in beta forever.
Yeah, we may never see this service. It's just very interesting to see that they're taking so long, and especially since, like I mentioned, 2 years ago, they were saying this is going to launch, and you're kind of thinking, well, what were they going to launch 2 years ago if they still don't have it now? But on the other hand, I don't know what people will think about what Spotify is doing. Clearly, Spotify is trying to turn itself into sort of a lifestyle product. It's kind of interesting that they have identified runners in particular as somebody that they're going to go after and target, and also starting to serve up some video content.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, first of all, Spotify announced that around the time that Music Key was supposed to launch, right? So they announced the video thing at some point, I think Music Key was going to launch around the same time that, or right after Spotify decided to announce that they're having video. So
yeah.
Spotify's saying, oh, we're going to play the video. YouTube's going to play the streaming music streaming game. We're going to play the video game, right? And the running feature, and also, you know, the kind of lifestyle-based playlisting that Spotify is doing, those are like cards right out of the Songza approach,
yeah.
Which is another streaming app that Google bought that... that has, you know, what are you doing right now? Making dinner, drinking gourmet coffee, exercising, hanging out with the kids. And then you click on that button and then it says, what are you in the mood for under that category? And then it gets you down to a playlist, which is actually pretty fun and useful for, you know, for the first time out discovering some music that fits your mood and what you're up to. But it's hard to maintain those playlists so that every time I go back to it, there's something interesting again, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I've tried Songza back, you know, when they were still Songza, and it seemed interesting. I'm just not somebody who gets into playlisting all that much. But the one thing I thought for artists that could be a frustration around this, it's like, okay, Spotify has already clearly said that they're moving away from music as it being their main driver. And how long before Spotify looks just like Netflix? I mean, if they're adding podcasts in, which I've looked online and I haven't really discovered how they are getting podcasts. I was trying to figure out, because they said they're grabbing 20,000 podcasts. I don't know if they're just looking at some charts and finding the most popular feeds and automatically adding them in. But so if they're having podcasts and video, it's like, okay, artists already feel a little bit frustrated about what's been going on with Spotify. Are they now even going to get pushed further back and it not even become a music platform? So that's just interesting to see. It may not work. They may find out that video and podcasts aren't what people want to, engage in while using Spotify. They just want music. But kind of curious to see what Spotify does with that.
It seems like a little bit of a transformation of the whole app concept, which is apps do a specific thing and do it well, and that's when they get traction. And now there's starting to be these apps that start to feel more like, oh, it's not a single thing that they do. Like when Twitter tried to launch Twitter Music, for example, trying to create an ecosystem, as these web platforms like to call it, and keep the people within the ecosystem and give you more reasons to stay in the ecosystem, which I think is partly what YouTube Music Key is about as well. They had the homegrown user-generated video platform that ended up naturally getting a lot of music on it, and now saying, all right, let's do a legal version of a streaming service here as well, and realizing just how hard it is to manage all the rights you need to do that.
And I have never really felt too much of a need for having that kind of combined feature app. Like, for me, it's okay to get my video from YouTube, to get my music from Spotify, to get whatever else from some other app. Like, when Spotify announced all this new stuff, I was kind of like, well, big deal. Like, none of that really is going to improve my life all that much. So, I kind of met it with indifference.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. In the end, it's typically users that decide whether something flies or not, if it becomes too complex or whatnot. But definitely lots happening in the streaming world and Apple about to launch theirs. So it'll be an interesting summer as far as that goes. Well, if you have a comment or an opinion, whether it be about streaming services or about fans using their phones at your shows, feel free to call our listener line. The number is 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And if you make the call short and intelligent, well, we shouldn't say intelligent. All our listeners are intelligent. If you have interesting perspectives.
Why should they have to be intelligent when we're not?
That's true. Well, we hold them to a higher standard.
That's right. That's the CD Baby podcast way.
That's right. If you have something to contribute and you have an opinion, we'd love to get it on the show. We actually have a call later in the show today. So feel free to call the listener line, weigh in, and we'll get you on the podcast. With that said, let's move on to our discussion for today. And Dimitri, I think this is a great discussion to have with you joining us for the first time the discussion about how to craft your story or how to craft your artist story. And, you know, this is something that we've talked about for years and years and years here at CD Baby on the podcast. I believe it was our second episode focused on building a story. And it's been a theme that we've had going for many years. And it's something that artists always are frustrated with, trying to figure out how to craft a story. What does it even mean? What are some pointers for pulling a story out of themselves that will get some interest in the press and club bookers? And clearly, Dimitri, you have a lot of experience with, you know, pitching stories to the press. So why don't we start with just defining what you would think when we talk about an artist's story and then telling the story, what that even means?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things I think about when explaining this to somebody who hasn't kind of sliced it in this way is typically people are going to hear something about you or read something about you before they even hear your music. Somebody's going to mention something to them, or they're going to see a review, or it could even be a playlist nowadays or a video or whatever else. And you have the opportunity as the creator, as the creative person, to help frame what's going to be said. And also, once they do hear your music, what's the DJ going to say between songs, even if it's a community radio or college radio? Or, you know, what's a blogger going to say? Or what's a fan going to say from one person to the next? You can lead them with hints pretty easily, not even by getting press, just by how you talk about your own music. You know, it could be in the old days liner notes, but now it could be anything on a website or on a social media site or anything like that. So that's really what I think of when I talk about what are the first words that you want people to say when your album is out or when you're on tour or when you have a single or a song coming out or whatever like that. So that's a broad contextual way to think of it. And then beyond that, I would say, you have an opportunity to sort of create the identity of what your music and what your band or artist reputation is through storytelling. And that goes back to not just pre-internet, but pre-print of, you know, how word of mouth worked from the beginning and how music is a form of storytelling and news relaying and all that kind of stuff. But now sometimes you want the news and the story to be about you so that you can make a career out of it. Does that help?
That helps. Because I think, you know, we were, I mentioned before we started recording, we did a Twitter chat recently. We've been doing them once a month. We've got one coming up next week with the hashtag DIY musician. We'll be there. Someone was going on and on about how they were having trouble crafting a story. They were in a profession, kind of an interesting profession. I'll leave everything anonymous. So, because I don't say this to pick on anybody. I just wanted to kind of lay out the scenario this person was struggling with. They had a profession that they left. It was an interesting profession, and to pursue music, and they thought that that would be an interesting hook, and really struggled with going back and trying to figure out how to tell how that all led to their music career, and just was getting no traction from anyone, and they were just frustrated by it, and wasn't seeing anything really helping their music career by trying to put a story around who they were. So I think that helps kind of defining it. Chris, what are some of your thoughts about telling a story and what you see people talking about and what you've experienced?
Well, one thing I always think about when this topic comes up is that I think artists really quickly assume that they need to or should have a very dramatic life story. And you know, I think that obviously can help make this process easier. You know, recovering addict or like Dimitri, someone I think you worked with, Baba Sala, who was from like a war-torn nation and he's using his music for peace. And so those are obviously very catchy stories. And it's maybe a little more difficult for us to think when we're like your average guy, what's my story? So I think that whole process is pretty interesting of how do you sit down and brainstorm ideas and kind of shape it, which I suppose is what we'll be talking about further on this. But
yeah,
but it's definitely possible. I guess that's what I'm saying is even if you don't have some, you know, super dramatic event in your life that that you can still craft an interesting story.
Well, the one thing I would highlight is that kind of what, going back to what Dimitri said, is that I meet so many artists when this topic comes up, they say, I just want the music to speak for itself and I don't want to have to worry about all the other stuff. And what Dimitri mentioned is that chances are, you know, your music didn't just fall out of the sky into their headphones and them hear your music. Chances are they read something, saw something, some sort of mention, some sort of communication other than music that described who you are, what you're about, and what you do. And that is where this really comes into play to kind of pique the interest of folks. Why in the sea of music out there, why what you're doing might connect with them. And I think that's the first step that people have to realize, that you're trying to get someone to take the next step to actually listen.
And there's that old saying, like, your music is the last thing that matters. And then once they're hearing it, it's the only thing that matters. You have to get them all the way to your music. And then it will either speak for itself or it won't.
You know, I think one of the challenging parts for musicians is, as usual, and as comes up on this podcast, is, you know, how much of this stuff do you do? How many different roles do you have to play as an independent musician or a DIY musician? And this is, oh, here's yet another thing. I want to be a musician. I want to compose music. I want to perform music. I want to record music. I want to collaborate with other musicians. I want to go on tour, whatever. And I don't really want to have to become a publicist is what the reaction is. And so I just want to throw out a potential inspiration seed for the musicians who are listening, who are feeling that way, which is, to be a musician or any kind of artist, you have the opportunity to impact the world, impact your fans, impact the people around you. But it's not just through your music, and your music actually can be listened to more richly and more deeply with context. And that context is sometimes what we're talking about, crafting a story in terms of actual words. Luckily, that can be the least expensive type of marketing to do, because it really just requires meditation and a pen and piece of paper. But you can also do the same with visuals, with photos, with artist photos, with album covers or thumbnails and social media posts, photos, that sort of thing. Also video. Video is another way to tell the story. And so if you take the deepest essence of your creative self and say, what does my musical contribution to the world mean? And how do I frame it? Not only in terms of my music and my recording process or my composing process, but also in terms of my story, but also in terms of my visuals, in terms of my stagecraft. It's not a separate task. It's part of the same creative outlet. And if you can approach this storytelling, pitch creation, in the same way that you approach composition as a creative opportunity to connect with people, I think it can be more inspirational than feeling like it's just another task to check off.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're kind of pointing to is that it's not just about writing a press release or writing this. It's about creating your whole artist persona, and that it's your story is everything, should involve everything you are. It shouldn't just be some blurb that is kind of disconnected from your music and from everything else about you.
And it's an ongoing narrative too. It keeps unfolding. It's not just here's my story, here it is.
Yeah, I grew up in this town and I got to here. It's about kind of about who you are and where you're going and the interesting things that can connect some folks to your music. And it should feel like it's naturally a part of everything you're doing. So since...
You know, hey, Kevin, before we go on to the next thing, both of you brought up some really interesting points that I just want to extract a tiny bit. You mentioned persona, and Chris, you mentioned narrative, and I want to talk about those two words for a second. First of all, with persona, just because Kevin used the word persona doesn't mean you have to create or fabricate a persona. Now, some people do, or they appear to, like, you know, a Lady Gaga type of image may, or even a Bjork or something might draw up a particular thing that might be different than... You know, a more traditional, say, singer-songwriter that's actually telling the story of their life or something like that. So just because we use the word persona there doesn't mean it has to be fabricated, although it can be. And that's really that's partly a question of strategy, but it's also really a question of essence of who are you? Are you the type of person that's like, when you're on stage, you are a different being? Or Are you your same self, but you happen to be going into some sort of musical trance or some kind of, you know, communication world with your fans that's different from your regular life, but you don't have to fabricate it. And then regarding narrative, which I think is a great point, Chris, is that there is a kind of a lifelong narrative that you're building that can be about your career or about your life or about kind of the string of music that you're writing or performing along the way. There's also can be a narrative for each song, and there can be a narrative for each project, whether that's an album or a thematic tour or even a campaign, an online crowdfunding campaign type of thing as well. So the cool thing about narratives is that it gives you a chance to reinvent and tweak as you go without disowning your persona. And so if you can create a narrative for each project or each year or each period, that can really help you come up with new ideas each time around and give you a reason to go back to the press or go back to a booking agent or go back to a venue or promoter of festival, go back to a partner of some sort, you know, for sync, all that kind of stuff. Gives you more opportunities every time you have a slightly different or a totally different narrative, but that's still consistent with your overall kind of arch.
Yeah, persona doesn't mean you got to go to the costume shop.
Right. Although
When you combine persona and narrative, it makes me think of someone like Bob Dylan or David Bowie, who clearly had these phases of sort of evolving persona, but you never got the sense that like that was really them, but the story was very real somehow still.
Right, exactly. And it also can give you a way to unite what might seem like seemingly disparate songs into a piece. Once you start to look for those threads and combine them, articulate them a little bit more, sometimes that can be helpful too.
So we titled this How to Craft Your Story. So let's get into some of the hows of what people can do to actually sort of bring this together. So I know, Dimitri, in your line of work, you're doing this for artists all the time. And Chris, you just did this. Really had to build the story when you're working on your Pledge Music campaign, and I've done it as well, but I've just kind of want to draw on what some of your guys' recent experience. Like, I'm an artist, I've got to start pulling this together. Where do I start?
So I have a little bit of a framework for that. There's basically three phases of this. There's casting a wide net, where you're gathering sort of all your thoughts and ideas and brainstorms around this, panning for gold, where you're sorting through all the stuff that you've kind of dragged in, and then there's the delivery of the story itself. So I think in terms of those three methods, those three phases. And I think each one kind of requires a different skill set or a different way of thinking as you go. For me, casting the wide net, I have some very specific suggestions about how to do it. Let's see. I think I've written down seven here. So the first one is to make a timeline of your musical development. Just you could start as early as the first year you started playing music. If you've never done this process, it can be super helpful for really understanding what were the moments in your life, personal or musical or business or with fans or whatever else that really impacted and grew you to where you are. But put together a timeline and talk about what happened, you know, each year as it relates to your music, whether it's different techniques or styles you learned or bands that were inspiring you at the time, you know, when you wrote your first songs, for example, all the things that were going on, you know, when you had incoming or outgoing bandmates, introducing a new instrument into your repertoire, things like that. You have that chronological reflection. That can sort of be a lot of good contextual food for thought. Then let's say you're promoting an album, or it could be a tour and you have a set list. Take each song on the album or the set list and describe each one. And we can get a little more into detail about what to do with that, because it could range from lyrical content to musical styles to influences. It could be what was happening when you wrote the song, what was happening when you've performed the song or in the studio, or, you know, feedback you got from a fan about how it influenced them. So that's a second approach. Another one would be to take each, if you're in a band, reflect on each of your band members and talk about what is the contribution that each of them make or have made, or what they bring to your sound, what their musical approach or their personal or their personality, their emotional or their regional upbringing, something like that, and talk about that. That can help describe your overall band. You can do the same thing, the exact same thing, with each instrument that you play as a band or as an ensemble or as a soloist, if you have multi-instruments, and talk about the influence around each one. If there's any techniques that you've created or that you've adapted, that can always be interesting. If you're using an instrument in a non-traditional setting, all of a sudden there's something interesting to talk about there. If you take acoustic with electronic and somehow do something there, if you can describe it well without having to hear it, that can be useful. Then you can do it with, if you have a discography of, you know, more than an album or two, you can review that and reflect on each album to give you a little bit of context of where you've been and where you're going as well. Then you can get a little more specific with your performances, like list your top 5 or 10 performances and, you know, just sort of explore what was the best thing about them. Why were they so great? What was happening inside your head, inside your heart, with your fans on stage, with your bandmates and all that kind of stuff. And then the last one I would mention is you can review any past press or feedback, written feedback from fans or press, compile the ones you like best and try to articulate what they said, that because sometimes it takes somebody else to help you understand sort of what your press angle is or what your story angle in general is. So you can use that as a launching pad as well.
So, and you're saying you're using this as kind of a way to compile a lot of thoughts to pull out more succinct ideas.
Exactly.
I just want to make sure someone's not like writing a 20-page document and putting it on their website and wondering why no one's connecting with it.
Yeah, no, this is the brainstorm phase. And, you know, if it turns out that it's all compelling and you can articulate it in really compelling ways and maybe parse it out over time on social media, it's not necessarily bad content to use in total. Probably not all at once. It would be a bit overwhelming. But it's more like, it's a process for like I said, casting the net widely,
yeah.
Especially if you're struggling to figure out what your story angle is.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like, maybe I missed it, but it seems like a lot of that was all sort of around the music. Then there's also the way of saying, like, what else in my life might be interesting? You know, maybe you're a farmer, or maybe you're a single dad and you basically have no time to record, but you still manage to make an album, or like anything personal that's kind of outside the music that might be able to...
Yeah, absolutely.
A compelling story.
Exactly. I mean, when you're putting together your timeline of your musical development, I would definitely include all the things going on in your life that kind of are influencing that. And the same with the songs and so forth. But yeah, no, a lot of times press stories are not even about that. I mean, this is the funny thing. Like, Kevin, I think you said people frequently say, I just want my music to speak for myself. But sometimes when you write the story, it's very hard to describe music on paper. And that's one of the things I think people get tripped up on. It's like, oh, how do I describe this? I mean, it's beautiful. It's, well, that doesn't really help.
Yeah. Well, that's why I find it interesting. As far as artists getting press, I think it's more helpful to look at the local press and see how they approach it. And by local press, I'm not talking about your weekly music rags, like the one that have all the shows and are typically used to writing about music. Like, you know, I live in the Portland area, but I actually live over in Southwest Washington, and we have our own newspaper over there. And I see the kind of stories they write about artists locally. There's always some hook that has something to do with, like, hey, it's kind of like, it's interesting to know that this person from our community who does this as their normal daily routine, whether it be job or whatever, is also this very accomplished musician. And I think that's how the local media tends to approach it, as opposed to go, hey, there's this very accomplished musician.
Well, there has to be a story that, yeah, is going to interest their entire readership or their entire listenership, whether or not those individual people like the music. So.
Yeah. But when you see, like, if all you're kind of gauging off of is like the New York Times or the weekly music rags, I mean, those folks are assuming that you know something about music, or they're talking about superstars that are kind of household names in most cases. So that's why I find, like, the local press, because there always is usually an angle of why they included the story and how, you know, like there's always some hook, at least been my experience, that I think is helpful when you think about crafting a story, that it's like, oh yeah, I go play music at night, but what I do during the day is also a part of who I am, and that's interesting to people.
Well, and that's also true not just for local publications, but any kind of generalist publication too, like a national public radio, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, Weekend Edition, those types of shows will also typically, I mean, obviously they cover some top name artists just because they're, you know, they've already got a big, established a big following and a highly respected career. But a lot of times they do a lot of eclectic music coverage, and they frequently will focus on things like what you're talking about, where it's not specifically just the caliber of the music. Not to say that the music's not good. It's just that the story angle that they go with is typically something. It could be kind of like what Chris was getting at there when you talk about your life. It could be profound personal moments, or it could be, like you said, Kevin, unexpected juxtapositions. And that can occur. The unexpected juxtapositions is an interesting one because it can occur between your musical career versus what you do the rest of the time or some other historic experience in your life. But it can also occur within the music too. That's always a good musical angle to talk about, is how you take two unrelated styles of music and put them together, or instruments in a unique way, because people find that innovative and it's kind of intriguing.
So we're kind of running a little short on time because we got a call that we got to get to and some listener feedback. So you gave a big framework. Do you have any couple tips after using that framework to sort of boil it down to something that you think is useful, or how do you get the best material out of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the stuff that we're talking about now is the next phase, is where you actually look through everything and look for those profound personal moments or those interesting juxtapositions or some, you know, things that like, if you step out of it far enough, you say, oh, that's intriguing. Another thing that I would say is specificity is always better when you're crafting your story, meaning don't say some broad statement about how you want the world to be, or, some broad emotional, like, it's very hard to pitch around a love song without talking about what actually happened in the relationship, which is not always easy for musicians. But the more specific you can be, the more somebody who's reading a story like this can actually tell what's going on. So look for those specific things. Sometimes it's, you know, letting your lyrics tell their story too. So that's another possibility. So I would say use some of those things to then highlight of that big wide net that you cast, highlight the specific things that you think will create the most intrigue. And then the next step is obviously doing the writing, or I think of it as polishing those gems that you've pulled out and, delivering the story. And I think one thing that always catches people up, and I think, you know, Chris and Kevin, you guys will have some feedback on actual writing this stuff since you've done it for your own careers, but you don't have to follow a press release formula. Like, I think that's one thing that hangs people up is, okay, so wait, I got to put the date here and I put the city here. And then I say, we're proud to present.
Dateline.
None of that stuff matters. Like, if somebody's reading your press release, it could be handwritten or all lower caps or whatever. And it obviously be better not to be handwritten or all lower caps, but it doesn't matter what format the actual writing takes. The most important thing is to intrigue them from the top, and then get them deeper into it as you go. As you go through the writing, you give some musical context. It's good to use a lot of metaphors since it is hard to talk about music in written form, but then to get specific and descriptive as well. And again, it's hard to describe music. So describe what the room looks like where the music's being created, or something that really gives people a vivid image as well.
I was thinking that along with what you were saying about sort of highlighting the gems and focusing in is I noticed that a lot of artists, they'll claim that they don't have anything interesting and then once they finally write their story, what ends up on their website is this giant bio that's super boring. So I think you have to also get in the framework of knowing I'm not going to be able to convey everything about myself, of all of my complexity or whatever. You know, you just sort of find those most interesting few things and then make that the story and give up the idea that you're going to convey everything about yourself.
So
that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Go.
So I think sometimes it ends up looking more like a resume than a story. And if you feel like you need to have that, then do both and put the story first. And then if people want to see the specific years of everything you ever did, let them click through to that. That can be good background if somebody's going to do an in-depth story on you, or if, you know, and by the way, storytelling like this, crafting a story, is not just for press. It's also for soliciting gigs and syncs and record labels and all sorts of stuff too.
Yeah.
But if you do end up using this process and end up with huge, large quantity of content, it would be good to then pare it down and have that as a background document instead of use it as the key core thing, because it's just overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of times where people are approaching this idea a lot these days is with fan-funded campaigns. Chris, did you, what was your approach when you, you know, there's typically the video, people feel like they need to tell the story of some segment of their career and that moment of leading up to this project. How did you kind of decide what to talk about?
You know, to be honest, I was thinking of my pledge campaign and my video and the description as, for the most part, approaching people who already know me or my music in some way. So I wasn't doing a whole lot of kind of new outreach, I guess, with it. But what I did do is explain why it's been so long since I put out a record. And, you know, mostly everyone probably would know that as well, that I've had a kid and blah, blah, blah. But I thought I'd start it off with that. And plus, you know, I get to put my daughter in the video, which is good for cute points.
It was very cute points. Her yelling rock and roll got me.
Right. So I sort of wanted to say, here's why I've been away, and here's why I'm so excited to be finally making this record. And along with that, I've made this record in a completely different way from how I've ever worked before. So I got a little bit into the process of how this recording was totally different. And yeah, that was basically it. And it was... I sort of was thinking about this as a totally different story from what informed the music that's going to be on the record, and maybe like sort of saving that for the launch of the album. But, you know, not that the making of it and what it's about are two totally separate things, but I was sort of holding that in reserve.
Yeah.
So when you're in the pledge campaign, will you actually be talking about what the album's about or not?
A little bit. Like, I've been doing updates with individual songs and, you know, little, mostly it's videos and MP3s, and I'll put a few sentences of context to set it up. But yeah, I haven't really gotten into that a whole lot yet. But
Is the process of posting each kind of blurb about each song actually help you kind of think through and build your narrative as you're leading up to the release date?
Yeah, I mean, it has. I'm imagining that once the campaign ends, I can kind of collect my thoughts from what I learned from it and shape that into, you know, the materials that'll go towards the actual official release.
Right.
I felt in our pledge campaign that we did last fall for the Small Town Poets Christmas record we did, I think that was kind of the thing that I had to stop and kind of regroup and figure out the longer story to tell over the course of the campaign. It's a little different situation than what Chris is in, because your album's already done, correct?
Yeah, well, it's mixed, and so mastering and manufacturing is left, but it's all recorded.
We were still in the process of recording, so we were trying to really try to bring the fan base along, but also with kind of what Chris mentioned, like I like the idea of like telling... I think, you know, why I was away, here's what I'm doing, this is why this is different. I think the video that you put together does a nice job of telling the story there, and it's a good example of even just how you lead into that album. But anyway.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. I find that, you know, with music from whether it's your live show, how you put together your show, how you write about yourself as a bio or want other people to write about you. It's all about telling a good story. People want a good story. I think that's why television is so popular. It's just crazy popular because people are more so than ever telling great stories on TV and on shows, and people love a good story, and that really draws them in to your music and using that craft of storytelling through everything you're doing. Sets you apart from just being, here's another song that came up in my playlist on Spotify while I was running because I slowed down and you play slow music. So, well, if you have thoughts, comments about telling a story, things that have helped you, things that you're still confused about, or if you want to share a video that you created or your artist story, feel free to do so. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or in the comment section of the show notes for this episode, you can post things there, links and anything you want to say. And you can call our listener line at 360 524-2209. And we have a phone call that I'm going to play right now.
Hey, Rob. This is Corey here in Nashville, Tennessee, solo pianist. And I love the recent podcast that Rob did as far as music publishing and royalties. And I wanted to check to see if that, as far as house concerts, if that was also included as far as the performances and a live venue, if that would be considered no such, or churches or that. And also as far as music that's played on SoundCloud, if that also would be considered as far as any royalties. Thank you very much. You guys are doing a great job.
Well, thanks for the call, Corey from Nashville. Rob is not available to join us on the podcast again, but I did email him for answers to your question and for your question. So here it goes. For an in-home performance, there would be no live performance royalty. In order for songwriter to receive these, there must be a license in place with the PROs and a license fee paid. Likewise, if an established live venue does not have a license, there would be no royalty paid. This is why the PROs are so proactive in getting businesses licensed, as if they are not the public. If they are not, the public performances that occur there do not generate a royalty for the songwriter and publisher. Concerning churches, you asked about churches. For churches, there are some conditions. Religious services are usually exempt from performance licensing. However, this is only true for performances or the printing of lyrics inside the building during the actual service. If the service is broadcast via podcast or on the radio, a license is necessary to do so and a royalty due. Also, if the church uses music in other ways, such as at their day camp, coffee shop, or holds a concert not part of the actual service, they would have to be licensed. And you had a question about SoundCloud. SoundCloud is now licensed by the PROs here in the U.S. And Rob says if he had to guess, he would say this is an extremely small pot of money, as the blanket deals they negotiate are usually a percentage of revenue, and right now SoundCloud is monetizing in a very limited way. So those were Rob's answers to your questions. I will add on the question about churches. There is a performing rights organization that deals just with churches. It's called CCLI. It's actually a stone's throw away down the street from CD Baby, based here in Portland. But they also license performance of copyrights in church services, but they are very selective with who they work with. So if you do have music that gets played in churches a lot, I would contact them and try to get signed up with them. But they are selective at this time and don't just let anybody sign up for them. But they do pay out performance money for music used in churches. Thanks for the call, Corey. And if you want to call in, again, the number is 360-524-2209. That number is also on the website, cdbabypodcast.com. And that will do it. Any final thoughts you guys have today?
You know, we did do an ebook on the topic that we were talking about before. And people can get it for free at storyamp.com/book. That's storyamp.com/book. If we had more time, we'd go through some of the other stuff in there. So you can read it on your own time. And I'm looking forward to seeing everybody in Chicago at the CD Baby DIY Musician.
That's conference. Right. Don't forget to get your tickets. We'll all be there. It'll be fun. We'll hang out. Good
awesome.
Times. All right. Well, I guess Chris doesn't have anything else to say.
My allergies have kind of finally taken over.
All right.
I'm trying not to sneeze.
All right. So we're going to end it here so Chris can go sneeze. So take it easy, and we'll catch you guys next time.
See ya.
See ya.